prescription pain medications containing opioids can be dangerous if misused. The symptoms of misuse include excessive mood swings, taking opioids when not in pain, seeking prescriptions from more than one doctor, and losing prescriptions so another one must be written. Recognizing the warning signs can save lives. Get the facts about opioids at iSaveFL.com.
This is Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee.
Tonight, we have news of a driver signing from someone, as we like to say, that is close to the program. The F1 and MotoGP seasons are also now underway. NASCAR is 7 races in. IMSA has had 36 hours of racing in their top series, so it's just about time for IndyCar. We'll start to look ahead to what we expect this season, and there's still quite a bit of critical testing to go. A few were at Sebring yesterday, some at Texas today, and more tomorrow. Next Thursday and Friday, almost everyone will be at IMS preparing for the 500. And last Friday, 4 drivers took to the world's most famous race course with an eye on the future.
It's always exciting to go into a new era and have new cars, new power units and everything. And I think that's great for the current manufacturers and also any manufacturers that are looking at coming to the NTT IndyCar Series. So it's exciting times. You know, Jay Fry and the whole IndyCar organization has always kind of shared with us the short and long-term vision, and this is just starting the next step in that path, in that direction.
Yeah, you know, I think the goal is to always push the limits. I mean, that's what we do in IndyCar racing. You know, we're pushing the limits of man and machine, and that's what excites us. You know, I hope that we're going to, you know, have some good stuff coming down the pipe. I think we do. I really do. We've got some interesting information on where we're going. You know, the future engine formula for sure is exciting to us. We want to make more power. We want to make the cars faster, but we want to keep them safe at the same time. So I think doing these things where, you know, it's really performing due diligence to make sure we're on the right track, making the right decisions, so that we can introduce faster cars but in a safe manner, that's what today's all about. But I am excited for it. I think we have a lot to look forward to. We've got some milestones out there for a new engine, new car parts coming. So every year I think we've got something for fans to look at.
Definitely been through some pretty big transitions, you know, from 2001 into, you know, to now with IndyCar and kart, you know, and seeing how it's evolved. You know, some have been really good, some have been not so great. But I think the process and how the NTT IndyCar series goes through it right now is totally different. You know, they definitely think a lot further ahead. Nobody's rushed as they used to be, or, you know, you're throwing things on at a race weekend and hoping it's going to work. You know, everything is much more methodical and thought out. So for a driver like myself, you know, hopefully I can help with some of those decisions and what I've experienced in the past. But there's a lot of smart people here, and, you know, just glad I'm able to work with them. So I'd just say that the biggest difference for me is that it's the transition and heading, you know, moving to the right direction is much smoother than it used to be.
It was good. We're working on things to make the show better. You know, at the end of the day, this is to make the fans happier. I think we're heading in the right direction of just finding where we need to make things better. I don't think we're there yet. There's still some work to be done, but I think just doing all the different levels of boost today gave us that little push that we needed, and it heightened the balance problems more. So that just gave us a chance to tell the engineers, okay, the front right tire is doing this, or the rear of the car is planted, or whatever it may be. I feel like we're in a good position in the rear of the car, but I just think there's still some work to be done to try and follow as close as we can to somebody else. And it's cool. We're back at IMS, driving with some legends, and we're just looking forward to the month of May.
We did this, we thought, really at the end of the day, that this would precipitate more questions than answers, and that's probably what happened, right? So, which is fine. Again, this is, we're looking at how this could work in 2023, you know, with the new hybrid system coming, and so we did learn a lot, yes, a lot, but it did also create a lot of other questions. So you think about it, in 23, in addition to the new engine, the 2.4-liter twin-turbo V6, that'll have 100 horsepower, the new hybrid system, too, will actually have the ability to have an additional 100 more horsepower. So, you know, how does that work? This push-to-pass system we have with the current program, we could simulate a little bit about how it could possibly work. So that's what we tried to do today. I think there were some, you know, they had some moments. I mean, it was just, you know, different. You're going to the corner, you know, instead of 2:30, you're going to like 2:36. I mean, there was some, you know, different reactions to the day, but it was really good.
And welcome to Trackside on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan. It's almost April, another beautiful day in central Indiana, and we welcome you to the program tonight. Kevin Lee, Kurt Cavan, Brad Huber is in our MS Communications Worldwide headquarters. We heard from Alexander Rossi, Joseph Newgarden, Scott Dixon, Pottle Award, and IndyCar President Jay Fry in our open, and that audio was courtesy of the drivers from CBS4. Here in Indianapolis, and the Jay Fry comment was courtesy via Twitter from Clark Wade of the Indianapolis Star. A lot of things to get into tonight on the program. Also later on, I think a lot of people were a little bit interested in NASCAR's first visit at the Cup level to the dirt in 50 years. Bob Pockris, one of the great journalists who works now for NASCAR on Fox, will be on the show coming up in hour number two. Bob went to Butler, didn't he, Kurt? I know he has ties to Indianapolis. No?
Bob,
what are
went
his ties
to Park,
here to town?
He went to Park Tudor High School, and he went to Indiana University. So he
there
is
you go. Okay.
A Hoosier. And, you know, he has a lot of affinity for Indianapolis Motor Speedway, obviously. So he can talk cup racing at the Speedway. He can talk Jimmy Johnson. He can talk dirt racing at Bristol, so should be fun.
And if you wanted to ask Bob questions about IndyCar, he would probably know most of those. And if he didn't, he would go find out. I feel for Bob because he's such a nice person that he gets the most obscure questions and he digs down and he has the answer. Sometimes I think the NASCAR industry relies on him. And I joked when he was out of work, he, like a lot of journalists, he spent a little time between jobs a while back, and I remember saying on the air that it is in NASCAR's extreme best interest to make sure Bob Pockris has a job covering the sport in the media. Yes?
Yes, absolutely. He works too much, actually. I think I work a lot. I know he works twice as hard as I do. I actually went to I was in a program at the Indianapolis Star right out of college with Bob's brother, Steve, who took the better route and is an attorney here in town. So Steve Pockris is an Indianapolis attorney who has done much better financially than Bob and I combined.
Okay. Yeah. We always advise kids. Yeah. This is a fun gig, but if you've got any other options, I would steer you in that direction as well. We have room for your Twitter comments, questions, whatever they might be at Kevin Lee 23 at Kurt Cavan on Twitter tonight. We are live, late breaking and local, available for you this evening. Before I forget, next week's program is on Monday night. So that's, I'm telling you, Kurt, I'm telling me, and I'm telling Brad, and it will be Trackside from Barber Motorsports Park for Road to Indy Spring Training. We'll explain why that is a little bit later on, but let's talk about what's going on in IndyCar. We'll get to the IMS test. I was traveling back from our family spring vacation in Florida, the 12-hour drive that took 17 hours on Friday. So I missed all of it. You were there, but we've had action here in the last couple of days. Let's kind of work backwards. What's going on at Texas Motor Speedway today?
So today, seven cars were on the racetrack testing IndyCar's aero adjustments that were made during the off season. This isn't a show about technical side, but basically they filled in the hole on the floor and did some other things. And tomorrow is, I wouldn't call it an open test, but there will be 17 cars. I think there'll be 24, 25 cars when we go to race there on May 1st and 2nd, and 17 of them at Texas tomorrow. So everybody's going to get a chance to kind of run the configuration that's new for 2021. And it'll be a good kickstart for what we'll see at Indianapolis Motor Speedway on April 8th and 9th. And a full test at that point. And I would expect when we get to that April test at the Speedway to be, you know, pretty close to the full field. I don't know that we'll have 35 or 6 cars at that test, but I suspect we'll be north of 30. And so you'll get a real good idea of what's to come.
Well, speaking of that, I'm going to get back to this test in a moment. Speaking of who might be there, I haven't dug into this because I was finalizing some other things today, but I did see, I think it was Bob Pockris, tweeted that Santino Ferrucci is not doing the next NASCAR weekend as originally planned. He won't be back in the Xfinity car until June because something along the lines of he has other commitments. Might those commitments be that he is busy on Friday, April the 9th, along with April the 8th at Indianapolis Motor Speedway? That's their next event, right? Is that the Martinsville weekend?
It is the Martinsville Saturday night race, and it is very likely. I haven't seen anything, not only from any of the teams, but anything internally at IndyCar or the Speedway. So I don't have any information pro or con other than the NASCAR side from which Bob tweets. But at this point, I know there are still three or four cars for the Indianapolis 500 that still haven't been publicly spoken for. So I think Santino stands, as we've discussed on past shows, to be a real likely candidate for one of those.
Keep an eye on that Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan car. I think that one would make a lot of sense, but there are still some others that are out there. But I think, you know, we had kind of assigned him to a coin ride before. I believe that is going to be taken. So that's a possibility. There have been some supposed conversations with Andretti before, but I'm not hearing that's where it's going. So I am far from having this on authority, and I would not write this down and say this is a report or anything like that because it's way too flimsy. But that's kind of the information that's percolating that I've heard firsthand and have read second and third hand. I wanted to peek at the weather while you were chatting. And I like the idea of going back to the Texas test. So seven cars today, more importantly, 17 tomorrow. And the reason why I mentioned critical testing, this is a big market. It's an important race. This year, it's two races. And I think it might be the most challenging race to get right, to have it be an entertaining race and not go over the edge to where some are not comfortable with it as a, quote, pack race. So there is a really happy spot there. And we've had some years where we've seen that. We've had some years where maybe it was a little bit too far, not necessarily at that track, sometimes at other tracks. And then, frankly, we've had some years where the racing was not super scintillating. And memory serves me that a lot of times the testing for that has been three or four or five cars. And that's pretty difficult to simulate what it's going to be like to race in. So I'm excited that there are 17. It's probably been a little while since we had that many. The only disappointing factor is that I see tomorrow the high in Fort Worth is 66, which is not what it will likely be in May. And the low is 40. So it's going to be chilly in the morning. Today, though, it was pretty hot. It was 83.
So one of the other things that factors into last year's race and then again in this year's race is, if you recall, the racetrack had a surface or an applicant applied for the NASCAR race to improve the racing, and it was a resin type of material that the IndyCar tires just didn't match up well with. I know Eddie Gossage and Texas Motor Speedway have spent quite a few hours, many in the evening, so when it was cooler, of scrubbing the racetrack to make it more make it less sticky, I think probably is a way of saying it. And so the IndyCar guys will be eager to hear how much difference they felt that made, having that resin essentially scrubbed off the racetrack, because that was a big deal last year. And you know, Scott Dixon ran away from the field. A lot of the cars had issues with the surface. Scott Dixon didn't, and what he lead, 157 of 200 laps. So, you know, hasn't always been on IndyCar. It hasn't always been on the racetrack. It's always a combination of factors when a race doesn't produce the type of racing you'd like. Sometimes it just, you know, one guy figures it out. And so it'd be interesting to see what the 17-car test. I know Eddie Gossage in the past has implored past IndyCar administrations to come down and test, do a proper test. I think these 2 days, assuming the track time is available, meaning you know, they don't get any rain and so forth. But if they get the kind of running that we would expect over these 2 days under this number of cars, then we should have a pretty good race.
And I think most of us feel like even in the years when the racing has not been as entertaining as we might like it to be, it's not necessarily anyone's fault. This is, I think I said earlier, I think it's the toughest track to find the right mix of aero and the right tire and everything else that is involved. And one other point to make about last year that was kind of a write-off is I'm not even sure if Firestone was able to bring the tire that they preferred. They were working on another tire for that race, but because of the pandemic, that all shut down. So they just had to, all right, this is what we got. We know this is acceptable. Maybe not ideal, but it's acceptable. And what's different also this year is that there was a NASCAR race last year before IndyCar. So it was kind of a combination of the sticky stuff on there, and I've forgotten the term for it, what they call it. Someone will tweet that to us. And it was almost that I wonder if it had been better if it was fully there. It was kind of a mixture that it was sort of there, sort of not there. But now you've had an entire winter for it to be weathered off. It hasn't been reapplied because the first NASCAR race is in June this year. So that leads me to feel like it's going to have a better chance that it's the way IndyCar would like it. So I'm optimistic on all fronts. And again, when it's two races and it's the race before the Indy 500, as far as ovals are concerned, that's going to be a nice platform to kind of kick off the month of May. I like this for Texas too. Kicking off the month of May with an oval race and a pair of oval races should draw some attention.
It should draw attention. I think it makes it, and we're going to have that debate on IndyCar.com tomorrow in our roundtables discussion, but I think it makes it, from my perspective, the most important month of the season. Because if you have a problem in that first race at Texas, that's going to impact you for race two. And, you know, if you've torn up one of your cars and you're scrambling, and yes, there's 2 weeks before the road race, it just, you know, it just sort of puts you behind for the whole month, or at least doesn't keep you on the right footing. And I think the drivers that come out of that Texas weekend with two races on clean footing, meaning their cars aren't torn up, they're on their schedule, and then can have a good month of May to finish at Indianapolis, I think those are your championship contenders, more so than maybe how you finish in that three-race stretch. If you can have a good month of May with two races at Texas, a road course race at Indy, and qualifying in the 500 itself, I think you're going to be in terrific shape.
PJ1, Brad reminds
me. Yes, PJ1.
Yes. That's the substance, and I should have known it because I'm staring at Twitter, and PJ Carlissimo, as mentioned, as one of the Westwood One broadcasters tonight. So that
I thought it was
PJ Chesson. I don't think PJ's working tonight, or at least he's not working in the NCAA tournament down the street. So that's exciting, and you know, you bring up a great point about the month of May, and I started asking around a little bit to some people. You know, what car are you using? I think ideally most are not using their Indianapolis 500 car. They're keeping that aside, but it's probably going to be there as the backup if something really bad happens for race two. And a lot of the smaller teams, they just don't have that luxury. They're going to, that's their car, and especially it's their super speedway car. They're going to run it and understand, well, we do still have a couple of weeks, you know, if it has to be repaired to some extent, but that's not extremely ideal.
Well, it's not. And these teams can handle, you know, an incident at Texas and then be ready for Indianapolis. There's no issue with that ultimately, but what it does, it puts you behind from a point standpoint with two races at Texas. It puts you behind in terms of work you'd like to get done. If you'd like to come home from Texas and be solely focused on Indy instead of fixing your backup car or fixing the car that was an extra car in your stable if you're a multi-car team, a big team. So it just kind of adds to the headache. You'd like to come into the month of May, and when I mean the Indianapolis portion, relaxed, prepared on your timeline, and not be sort of messing with Texas and repairing the stumble that you had it in Fort Worth.
The good thing is they do have the next weekend off before they would run. And the other good thing is that for the Indianapolis-based teams, there's no travel. They come home from Texas. They'll be home by Monday night. What is that? The second or the third? Let me pull up a calendar there. And they're going to have a few days in the shop. They're going to be able to Monday the third. They'll be able to get moved in to the Speedway. Oh, I'm sorry. No, that's the very next weekend, isn't it? They don't have a weekend off.
No, they have a weekend off. They run May 1 and 2, and then the 15th is the road course race.
They're not running Mother's Day weekend this year.
That's correct.
Looks like it's the 9th.
It is.
But the GP is still on the 15th.
That's correct. So there is plenty of time. In fact, you said they would come home Monday night. They'll be home Sunday night because that second race at Texas, as I recall, I don't have it in front of me, but I think it's like a
four-ish.
It's an earlier start. Yeah, 4 or 5 o'clock. The teams will be home by midnight. So
the ones flying, the cars will get back the next day, I think, probably.
That's
right. By the time they get all that done. And by the way, normally I would have the schedule pretty much memorized, but I haven't bothered to do that really since about, April of last year, because it keeps changing. You know, we've still already had two or three versions of this year, and we're not 100% certain that the calendar that we see in front of us, there are still questions about Toronto as to what's going to happen there. So where do I need to be this weekend? What's going on this weekend? And we go from there. But at some point, I'll start to make a little better record of what's happening and where it's happening and so forth.
But let's be emphatic. I think we will all be at 16th in Georgetown, the roundabout, thereabouts, on May 30th, because Roger Penske has been pretty emphatic, and while the adjustment of the COVID-19 virus and the ramifications continue to ebb and flow, I think we are going to have an Indy 500 on May 30th.
Oh, no doubt. And I have full confidence in every other round the rest of the season. I guess I can't ever say 100% when you're talking about the West Coast. The West Coast is a little bit different animal, but I still feel pretty optimistic about when we're talking about late August and September, or are we talking all September for the West Coast events? I tweeted the schedule today. I should just look at my Twitter.
The West Coast races are all in September, and I just returned from the West Coast. I was in LA last week, and things are just about as normal as they are here. People are a little more protective. And obviously the Grand Prix of Long Beach has got some different hurdles from a government and city cooperation standpoint than most racetracks that are privately owned. But still, I would expect, you know, from what I saw in LA, I think we'll be racing there come the second weekend in September. Maybe it's third. I think it's the third weekend. No, fourth weekend. It's, fourth week for Long Beach.
Exactly. The 12th is Portland. The 19th is Laguna Seca. And the 26th is Long Beach wrapping up the season. So, you know, I would still put those at like 99% or something like that. The only one that's still a question mark is Toronto. And, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ago, I think the general consensus was, well, there's no way that's going to happen. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I would go like 50-50 at this point. I think you just wait, and you may know something more. Maybe internally they've already got a plan and they're waiting to announce it, but I'd be surprised if they announce anything right now. I think you just wait and see where things go. I think I saw something the other day that hockey players, if they wanted to come and go from the country, are no longer required to do a 14-day quarantine. It's down to a 7-day quarantine. So you're getting a little bit closer in that regard. And who's to say, what if there's a requirement? Can a private business do this? They might be able to just say, hey, if you want to work this race, if you want to go, you need to have records of your shots. And if you do, then you can get in and out.
I think municipalities have decided hockey players can do whatever they want.
hockey players have decided that.
Yeah, hockey players have decided that. So I don't think it's that issue. But you're right. I don't know if I fear, but I suspect that if we're able to prove that you've had shots, I think that will expedite the process. And, you know, one of the things that is part of this sport and why it should be part of the discussion is that during the month of April, it was announced earlier in the week, or maybe it was last week, that Indianapolis Motor Speedway is going to be, again, a vaccination location, and that's largely to get, you know, as many of our race fans vaccinated as possible. You're talking 6,000-7,000 people a day times what, 15-18 days. There's going to be a lot of people vaccinated. Of course, we see the numbers continuing to grow in that respect across central Indiana, and I think obviously that's where the largest portion of the Indianapolis 500 attendance comes from. So I think if you, you know, getting back to just travel in general, I think if you have your vaccination, I think that's going to ultimately be a gateway to Gateway and other places. So mostly, I guess we're talking about Toronto, but I would say international travel, that'll be a help.
Yeah.
More likely than not.
I'm giving it a chance. I know there are a lot of hurdles, and I haven't heard any update. The last I heard, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ago was they're not even scheduled to get shots to people 60 and above until July 1st. So that means they're way behind. So that pace is going to have to pick up, but maybe it does. And it looks like we're getting to a point pretty soon in America where everyone that wants a shot is going to have had a shot. And in that case, then I could see us shipping some of our shots off to other countries, because it's going to be tough to force people to take it. And there are people that have just decided I'm not in and I'm not getting it done. Tomorrow, by the way, is the day in Indiana where 16 and over, all the way down to 16 years old, can sign up for the vaccine. And I believe they'll probably get appointments very, very quickly. So we're getting close to, you know, I think we're, by the time we get to the middle of April, anyone that wants one will have had one in Indiana. And then I think some of us are going to feel like, all right, it's up to you. If you don't want one, it's on you. The rest of us are going back to life. Jump on board, or, you know, you're on your own. That's kind of how I feel about it.
I know there's a lot of things politically correct and incorrect. Are we allowed to ask each other if you've had your shot? Can I ask you that?
I've had one. I get one more on Thursday. I didn't get the one dose or Johnson & Johnson. I got the Pfizer. So I go back on Thursday for number two.
So I was at the Speedway, and this will be happening with the April shots. We'll be giving Johnson & Johnson. That's all we've given so far, although I think there will be some that will be Pfizer for some people, but I know within the paddock, we're going to try to get as many people done before the Barber race, but we've so far at the Speedway been what I've been calling the John Calipari one and done shot.
Okay. And I would have probably taken that one if I had the option, but when I went to sign, and by the way, when I went to sign up, it was the next day. I signed up and it was, yeah, what time do you want to come? So there are plenty available. I would recommend the Indy Urban League in downtown Indianapolis to those if they're still accepting appointments. When I was signing up, they were only going through like April 5th, but they were parking right next to the building, very organized. I think I was in and out in about 30 minutes, and that included the 15-minute wait after you got it done to, you know, just make sure that you didn't have any kind of reaction and you're on with your day. All right, that's enough shot and talk for the day.
No, I'm going to say come to the Speedway because you can take the little tour. It's kind of like being on the bus tour. You never have to leave your car. You can park. They give you the shot in the Formula One garages. Then you get to drive on pit lane. It's an experience. So you should do it at IMS.
That. Yeah, that wasn't an option when I was looking, because I was just looking, all right, when's the first time I can get it? Tomorrow? Okay. Is there anything at the Speedway available? No? Okay. I'm going downtown. And that worked out quite nice. All right, let's get back on topic. And I want to see what you learned, what was learned, what needs to be learned about what we saw at IMS in testing for the future this past Friday, talking about basically push to pass on an oval. We'll get into that coming up in just a moment. On Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
I'm Ryan Hunter-Reay, and this is Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
At Kevin Lee 23. At Kurt Cavan is the social media handle. Sorry, I forgot to mute the FaceTime. That's how Kurt and I can see each other like we're in studio. Broadcasting from the home studios tonight, Brad Huber is in the real studio. George Phillips, Oil Pressure Blog, says or asks, will out-of-state residents be allowed to get shots at the April IMS event? I would drive up for it. My guess is no. But I don't know that. I'd call and ask.
I think you should, George, if I remember tomorrow, I'll ask that question and then get back to you. And I will, I don't know that I'll put it out on social media because it doesn't, I'm not sure that's the purpose of it, but I think it's a, I think you have to be an Indiana resident.
That's been my kind of understanding, that it's state by state, but you never know. And especially as we get to a point where, if not all of the appointments are being filled, then it might become open for something like that. But I wouldn't drive up just for that.
Well, here's the other thing is that, you know, we're going to make sure all the IndyCar teams have got the shot if they want it. And so, you know, that will require some out-of-state participation. So it might be allowed, but I'll have to check. But
okay,
leave it to Roger Penske to think of everything, and he will make arrangements for all the teams to have shots before and be, you know, verified and have had your time to recover before the first week of racing at Barber Motorsports Park. You know, that's April 17, 18.
Also, before I forget, the test at IMS next week on April 8th, the 9th, I was asked if fans are allowed like normal by the museum on the mounds and so forth. I assume so, yes.
I don't know that. I think the announcement on that will be later in the week. I do know that there will be a way to watch it in a streaming service, and I think we'll have that on IndyCar.com. So be thinking about, you know, turning on your streaming at work. I encourage everyone who's at work to turn that on and let it run. I think it's like 11 to 6 on Thursday and 10 to 4 or 10 to 5 on Friday. So
I was told not to mention streaming until next Monday. So if there's any complaints about that getting out, it was Kurt Cavan. Kevin Lee did not mention anything about that.
Well, I'd like, and that may be the case, but I do know that we'd like, you know, we want everybody who can do it to watch. So,
okay. So those thinking of coming up, if you are traveling, stand by because, so maybe there's a chance that they're basically, the fear would be is what if 10,000 people decide they want to come up there and that's not a great idea. Normally it'd probably be fine because you're probably talking 200 or 300 that come up for these, but hey, people have been pent up for a little while, so you never know. So I'll leave that to the authorities to make a decision on that front as that moves. I also saw a question that was kind of directed to Doug Bowles and me, and Doug would be the one that could actually answer that. And since he didn't, my guess is, I think it was asked about, you know, are the buses going to be running around for the 500 and so forth. And the answer is the same as it has been almost everything. You don't want an answer right now. If you need an answer right now on those kind of things, the answer is no. But on May 1st, the answer might be entirely different. So I just wouldn't really press anyone for those kinds of things that involve putting a lot of people in a small area like that. So just give them a little time on that. I don't think anyone would have any kind of definitive answer. Certainly they couldn't give a definitive yes at this point until we move along and see how things are going. But I think there's reason to hope that, yeah, something like that might be available if they just kind of limit how many people are on a bus. But say a bus holds 40 people, I don't know that the current environment is going to welcome 40 people getting on a bus.
Well, and the bigger issue at this point is what about attendance at the Indy 500? And so what Roger say, you know, a couple weeks, I mean, I think by the middle of the month, you ought to start to have some clarity or some direction. And so there are bigger issues to resolve at this point than the actual bus routes. I understand the importance of them, and there's certainly a benefit to the community. But at this point, there's a couple more details that are more larger in scope than that.
Yeah, buses kind of unfortunately fall down later in the list. And I found the tweet from Jacob Schellenberger. hashtag say what you want to say. Said I'd choose this option if possible. But, you know, I hope that you don't have to know by the end of March whether the shuttle service is available or not. It's handy and it's good, but hopefully you can be flexible enough to be able to wait and say late April or early May and make that decision. Now, when we get to May 10th or May 15th, that is a very legitimate question to start to make your game plan as to how you're going to get to the racetrack or not. John Day at 81 Indy asked about how you're able to get Peacock and whether practices are going to be there and so forth. Just do a Google search. Google is your friend, and you can find Peacock and sign up for it. There are three different tiers. There's the free one that gets you some things like the first two seasons of The Office and the Dan Patrick Show. The middle tier is what you're going to need for IndyCar. And that's probably the tier you need to get some of the other motorsports content, like Supercross, and then some of the other sports content like Premier League and other. And then there's a $10 a month version, which is commercial free for some things. I don't know that that would benefit you in any way as far as IndyCar is concerned. So if you're only signing up for IndyCar, I think just that middle $5 tier is all that you need. And it's essentially taking the place of gold. So it's going to be practices, qualifying, whether qualifying is on TV or not, you're going to see that. And then I think race recaps. I don't think anything is, or race on demand. I don't believe you're going to see that airing live at this point. So that's what was announced when the announcement of the change from Gold to Peacock a couple of months ago. And that's the information that I have. My guess is they'll send out a press release right before the season with social media, with links of how you need to sign up and so forth. I do know this. I through my American Express card, there are offers for discounts for certain things. And, it, you know, you get $20 off if you buy something through Delta. I've been getting one that says I get a $5 credit on my Amex card per month for Peacock for the next 3 months. Hmm. So that would pay for it. And it's through March 31st. So I'm actually going to sign up for it tomorrow because we're no different than anyone else. We're signing up and paying for Peacock just like you are. So I'm going to sign up and check out Peacock tomorrow and get the middle tier. I've had the free tier and have watched that for quite some time. So I will be getting my first 3 months of Peacock for free. Hooray. So there you go.
If I get commercial free, can I get Paul Tracy during the commercial breaks? Because that would be worth more than the $10 I might have to pay.
I think you get Radio Kevin. That's usually how that works. I've usually been in charge of filling the commercial breaks.
Or is the commercial breaks when Paul takes his naps?
That could be, which is also worth the $5 a month.
He's a world-class napper.
Yeah, he's good. All right, I've rambled on too much and we didn't get to the topic at hand. So we're gonna touch on it here. What happened last Friday? What did we learn? What was that about at IMS?
So it was a test. It was a test to see how with the new hybrid engine the component to the engine configuration in 2023, they came up with a mechanism that would allow it to simulate whether push to pass could be used on an oval and whether that was a good idea or not. And it was a test. And I think if you listen to the four drivers, and they were Scott Dixon, Joseph Newgarden, Alexander Rossi, and Pato O'Ward, at least the veterans of the four were saying, look, you know, we can always work toward making the racing even better, but acceleration, extra acceleration down the front straightaway, or the back straightaway is not necessarily what we would prefer at this point. Now, again, it was a test. They've tested push to pass. I think now this is the fourth time on an oval. It may have some uses in the future. It may be better suited for a short oval. But it was a test to see how it would perform. And so the four drivers ran in unison quite a bit during the afternoon, and they had a chance to kind of push to pass, which was in this case increasing the engine, the boost to levels that they used during qualifying in Indianapolis. And so it gave them an extra surge down the front straightaway and the back straightaway, and it saw speeds that were, 5, 6, 8 miles an hour faster heading into the corner, And I think generally the response was, you know, it's interesting. We may have some more work to do. It may be what we use. It may not, but it was a test. And so I think that's, as Jay Fry said, it's good to test things. And this may not be the last time they test it, and it, or it might be, or it might be, but they'll gather data and see where we go from there. I think generally, though, we're not quite ready for push to pass on the big ovals, but it might have a short oval application in the future.
This thought may be off base, but my thought of this, my first initial thought, and like I said, I was traveling and I wasn't able to be there, and I haven't really talked to anyone about this other than reading some comments. And I read Robin Miller's story on Racer today that he's opposed to it. And I think when you got away from the initial sound bites, it kind of sounds like most of the drivers are, at least as of now, opposed to it. But my thought was this wasn't so much about we need to figure out a way to make the racing better at IMS. It was, we've got to find a use for hybrid power or something to do with that. So it works. That's what the hybrid power is for on the road and street courses. And it can be harnessed or regenerated through the brakes. So I'm still not sure how that's going to work when there's not braking on a super speedway. But is that a part of it that we're looking for a way to be able to tell manufacturers and partners we're using hybrid and just trying to figure out the best way to do it? So here's an idea. Maybe it's in the push to pass and the extra boost.
Well, I said, you know, looking for a way to make the racing better, because you're always trying to find ways that make, you know, make it a great, exciting show. So again, don't take that the wrong way. And you're right. There is an element to this, to utilizing your hybrid platform on a big oval like Indianapolis. What a great place to show off hybrid technology than at Indianapolis. That would be your showcase place, obviously. So, So yes, that's part of it. But you know, at this point, it doesn't seem like, you know, anybody's done with the discussion. And yet I think this test, you know, as Jay said, it showed us some things, which is fine. It showed us some things We hadn't thought about. So there's some things we have thought about. That's what testing is for.
And by the way, if that is the case, that they are looking for a way to implement hybrid, then I think it becomes more important to continue to try to tweak it. You know, maybe it's not as much boost as it once was. Maybe it's a little bit more subtle, so it's not so jarring, especially if you happen to come off of it when you're going through a corner. So I think there could be some possibilities. And you're right that you can always improve the racing. Maybe there are other ways to do it, but it's at least worth a think, because I think the hybrid aspect is going to be important to manufacturers. And there are some that think that's already how you lost one potential third manufacturer, is because when that was being discussed, hybrid wasn't an option. Now it is. All right. So now we've got to try to show how relevant, and that gets more people interested within the decision-making group of a manufacturer, because they don't want to look backwards. They want to look forward. What's next? And, you know, that's the challenge we've talked about before, is what's next beyond hybrid. You've got to be dealing with that as well. So all this is working about, but I wouldn't, just because some drivers and their opinion matters. It does. It matters greatly. But just because drivers that we like and respect, and generally I would adhere to what they're thinking, but just because they immediately originally say no, doesn't mean you dismiss it. You still think about it, you talk about it, and maybe you find out a way that it's workable. So I think you'll see this considered as we move forward some more.
Agreed. Agreed on all fronts.
Okay. All right, we'll get into some other quick things that we missed in the next segment. And then regroup with some big news throughout the day. And Bob Pockris of Fox also talks about dirt racing for NASCAR and more, all coming on Trackside.
I'm Tony Kanaan, and this is Trackside with Kurt Covin and Kevin Lee on 1070, The Fan.
Couple of nuggets before we round out the hour. Did you see Romain Grosjean was talking about how bumpy it was at Sebring yesterday, and the response was, you're on the smooth section of the track, try the other side.
Yeah, poor Romain. He's gonna get his teeth rattled a few times this season.
Wait till he goes to Detroit. That's pretty bumpy as well. And the section he's on, where IndyCar tests, You know, as Jackson was telling us a few weeks ago, it wasn't too bad. It was significant, but he'd been on the full IMSA course as well. That's pretty bumpy. Really just going around turn 17 is the one that really stands out. And that's too bumpy for an Indy car, so he won't have to deal with that one as well. And speaking of tracks, I saw that maybe this was last week. NASCAR announced that it worked with the city of Chicago and iRacing to scan its streets for a street race for their Pro Invitational Series event. They're doing some things like IndyCar is. And by the way, what, Thursday night's the finale? And they're running at Sebring, yes?
Yes.
They're running at and are they doing the full 3-plus-mile circuit?
I can't tell you.
I bet they are. That's so short. You know, it's like a 50-second lap going around the short course. So I think that's probably what would make that unique is the IndyCars doing the full course around there would be kind of interesting as well. And apparently they've based this kind of on the same idea of a track. And you probably remember this from when you were a kid in the early 80s, CART announced a race, Lakeshore Drive and near Soldier Field that was going to happen in 1981. And that eventually got squashed. It's everybody's dream to run a race in Chicago on the lakefront. And this has kind of brought people up again that, hey, maybe there's a chance. NASCAR could be talking about this. I will believe that when I see it. I do not see how you get through the municipalities and the street shutdowns in the city of Chicago. I don't know how there's any way you can run a street race in downtown. If somehow they do, then IndyCar needs to jump on board and tag along with that.
Yeah, make that a doubleheader. No, I don't. I agree with you. iRacing is one thing. Real thing seems pretty unlikely.
Cool for iRacing. That's one of the advantages of it. I saw Jenna Fryer from the Associated Press's tweet from Bruton Smith, the owner of SMI, who once said, everyone loves a street race until the bills come in. And that's why so few of them
last.
It's very difficult. And that's why Long Beach is a gem. And we think Nashville has a real chance because of everything that's involved there to make it long-term too.
And St. Pete is a gem.
Yes, it is. You're talking 16, 17 years now that event has gone on. It started with the 1 year as a Champ Car event in 2003.
Correct. And then 2005, it went to this current administration, and the promoters done a nice job down there, Green Savory.
Yes, they have. And I'm glad that race was pushed back 6 weeks or so, because I think it's going to be a much better environment at the end of April than it would have been in early March. Coming up next hour, we'll get to more of your thoughts and questions, comments at KevinLee23. Bob Pockris of Fox NASCAR joins us. And big news in the Lee household we'll get to in just a moment. And we'll go inside everything you didn't ever want to know about putting a junior formula program together. Coming up next on Trackside.
This is Ed Carpenter, and you're listening to Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Thanks for staying with us. Kevin Lee, Kurt Cavan, Brad Huber is in our downtown Indianapolis studios on the Circle. Kevin Lee 23 at Kurt Cavan via Twitter. Next week, we're on Monday nights, and then we'll have, what's the show the week after that? I've actually got a schedule for the month of April. We are on Monday night, the 12th as well. So we're on every Monday night in April other than Tuesday, the 20th. So make notations of that. So we've got two more weeks to kind of get the season preview going. We'll start breaking things down a little bit more. And next week, we will be trackside, or at least some of us will be trackside at Barber Motorsports Park. We'll get to that in a moment, but there's still a lot more going on this week. We had 7 cars on track at Texas Motor Speedway today, 17 more tomorrow. There's going to be testing at IMS next week, April 8th and 9th, and then it's the season starting from and it's really the 17th and 18th as far as IndyCar is concerned for Barber Motorsports Park. It's a 4-day weekend of activity there, the road to Indy, and this is, I think, all public knowledge because that's how I found the schedule on the USF 2000 website, but those cars are on track at something like 8 a.m. on Thursday morning, the 15th on Thursday, and then they will have some Road to Indy races on Friday. IndyCar takes to the track on Saturday along with the Road to Indy, and then Sunday is the IndyCar race, and it's a similar schedule on St. Pete weekend for the Road to Indy, starting on Friday, most of their work Friday and Saturday. And then IndyCar is a three-day weekend, though, for St. Pete. They have some activity, I believe, on Friday and then on Saturday and Sunday as well.
I haven't seen that IndyCar's announced that. David Mulcher, I believe, on motorsport.com had, you know, a story that talked about road course races being two-day shows largely, and except for Detroit, I believe. I forget how it went, but the street circuits, because the build out, the expense, you know, it would be, those would be 3-day shows.
Yeah. So that would make sense for St. Pete that it'd be Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Barber a Saturday, Sunday for IndyCar. And then they will use that available track time for support series on Thursday and Friday because it's a permanent road course. You're not going to get that at a street course because obviously you want to keep the streets open as long as you can. So they'll have that open and ready by Friday morning. And Detroit officially now will also include IMSA. That has been announced. It had been kind of jockeyed back and forth what's going to happen with Le Mans moving. That impacted some IMSA teams. It's going to include Corvette running that weekend. So they will have a WeatherTech race, and GTLM is going to be a non-points paying event because I think Corvette's probably going to be the only one in the class that elects to run that particular event. So that's some more activity. I also saw that they are expecting Super Sebring to return in 2022. It has not happened the last 2 years because of the pandemic. So this year, IMSA and WeatherTech and other IMSA series did run recently at Sebring, but the World Endurance Championship did not. But assuming all things are back to go, we should see that. And that will be notable because there are going to be some debuts of some new cars coming up in the World Endurance Championship. So in that world, you're going to see some new things at Super Sebring weekend. I think that might be the first race for the Peugeot LMH hypercar effort next year. So car people will get really gaga about that. And you'll have some more reasons to attend Sebring coming up next March. And I think they already kind of have a date for that, likely to be March 18th and 19th with IMSA and the 12-hour on Saturday the 19th. All right, we've hit the headlines, Kurt, because the biggest news of the day is that the young driver that I manage, that I've stumbled upon here recently, that I think has a lot of promise, and I've taken him under my wing to handle the business side of things, not the racing side of things. There is no racing coaching going on in my world. But today, Jackson Lee was announced for a 2021 Road to Indy program in USF 2000 with the team that won the Drivers' Championship last year and ended Cape Motorsports' run of something like 9 championships in a row, Jay Howard Driver Development, with support from many, including, let's see, off the top of my head, we've got Browning Chapman Specialty Contractors. We've got Tanemic Industrial Coatings and Indiana Coating Specialists. We've got Doug Mockett, Inc. They make really cool gadgets in wire management and grommets and things like that for your home or your home office or your office in general. We've got Spruce Haven Farm, Pursue Happiness Cold Brew Coffee, because it's coffee based with milk. Jackson Lee 10 is the code. Google Coffee, and you can purchase some, and Jackson will get credit for that. So they are big partners, long-term partners like Caldwell Realty and Caldwell Subways, and many associates as well. But I think those are the co-primaries that we have. Did you see the pictures of the car on the internet today?
I did. And you didn't mention me as a minor sponsor.
I have not received your check yet. Now, I know
it's
we have some
mail.
Post service.
It's in the mail.
I know. I believe some things. Actually, someone just told me they got something we mailed in December recently. Two weeks ago.
Can we get a Trackside sticker on the car? Is that allowed?
I'm going to need to see some cash.
I'm going to get some coffee.
Some okay, good enough then. So last week I was going to tweet a picture of this. I haven't done it yet. Somebody sent in something about moose. And in the mail today, what did I receive? Wait a minute. Only you on FaceTime will see this. I think I brought it here to the office. What do I got here?
Nice.
It's Rocky and Bullwinkle. And then my next thought was, who has my home address? But it was from our buddy Joe Berkmeyer. Joe is one of the people that helped me with NBC. And Joe was the original supplier of the moose hashtag. And this is the opportunity to remind everyone, I don't have a fetish with mooses. Or is it meese? I'm not sure. This all started, hashtag moose, because 10 years ago, somebody had in their Twitter handle moose. And as I was reading it, I chuckled. And I said, that kind of stands out. Anyone with moose goes to the front of the line from now on. And then we had 10 or 15 different people change their handles to moose to be able to get to the front of the line. So that's good luck. And this will find a spot on the race car.
So the other question is, why does Joe Berkmeyer have your address? That's another question.
Well, I suppose you would have my address too.
I don't have it.
Joe sent me a Christmas card. I did move.
Yeah, I didn't send you Christmas cards.
I like to stay agile to kind of keep people guessing on that front. So I'll spend a moment here just kind of talking about the journey. Because, you know, I'll start with this. And it's always a fine line of how much I do on this because I don't want to become Kathy Lee and just talk about my kid. But, you know, this is a racing show. So people are presumably somewhat interested in racing. And I think they're kind of interested in how it all works. And I would say this, Jackson is this show's driver. Because to be able to get to this level without having family wealth is really, really unique. And if you see the car, you kind of see why. And if people wonder, what do you do all winter when there are no races and you're not really working? Well, this winter, I was in partnership sales. And I was I joke about being the chief revenue officer. But we have been incredibly fortunate to be able to put a program together without family money. I'm still paying off the last couple of years and dealing with pandemics and everything along with that. And the sponsorship side of this really did start with the radio show. Now, Jackson's first sponsor when he was in quarter midges is like most kids. It was his Uncle Steve, the blind man. He owned a blind company, and it was his fault we got into this because he drove sprint cars, and his son Sammy was a really good sprint car driver at the time, and they kind of helped us get started on that front. But it was Don and Jennifer Caldwell who listened to this radio show, who came up to me at the Milwaukee race and said, "Hey, I've heard you mention that your son races," and they handed me a check and said, "We'd like to help out." And they have continued to grow in their partnerships with Caldwell Subways and Caldwell Realty over the last several years. And whether they give us another dime, they're always going to have a place in the program. And that kind of got it started. And my whole approach to this, my wife would tell me I'm extremely pessimistic. I would say I'm realistic, but I knew how difficult this was to do. And when you get racing drivers, whether it be IndyCar, NASCAR, whatever, if you got deep and dug into the bios, this includes NASCAR too, almost all of the drivers' dads are CEOs. That's how it starts, that either they're paying for it or they have enough connections to do B2B deals. You know, an example. Riley Herbst, NASCAR Xfinity driver now, has had Monster on the side of the car. How did that happen? Well, I think his dad owns a whole bunch of convenience stores. And I would guess that has to do with him placing Monster at the front of the store. And part of that deal is Monster is going to pay for Junior's racing. That's how most of these programs work. Now, you use whatever asset that you have. For some drivers, it's modeling on the hood of a car. And I don't default them for that or begrudge them for it. Use whatever you have. Some of it is dad is a CEO and has great connections, or maybe dad just knows people in the paddock and what we have based our partnerships on. And I had a lot more success this winter than the past was we're going to be racing with IndyCar. So I am essentially offering IndyCar type partnerships at junior level prices. And our partners are going to get some hospitality benefits and trackside tours like I've done for other IndyCar teams, partners in the past. So that's part one. And then part two is when Jackson won the Team USA scholarship, it kind of became doable. So going back to my pessimism, I always wondered, how can we do this? Okay, maybe we can raise $20,000 a year and run go-karts or something like that. But anything beyond that is just out of the realm. And I'll just tell people that a budget for USF 2000 ranges anywhere from the lowest price we were quoted, and the better you are and the more success you have, the lower the price is, was $230,000 up to basically $400,000. $400,000 is the sticker price. And there are drivers that have gotten even a better deal than $230,000 before because of their talent, returning driver, good chance to win a championship, things like that. So it does happen at a reasonable rate. But to be able to find that kind of backing seemed absurd. But I was told, so a couple of people kind of helped convince us to give this a go. The first was Pippa Mann. So when Jackson went to Sebring for a Lucas Oil test, we were trying to decide whether to do that Karts to Cars shootout in 2018. And we're just kind of going to gauge ourselves, himself, against other drivers in the series. Pippa said, hey, he's pretty quick. He's got a chance to win some scholarship money. So we invested in that, won some scholarship money. And then when he won the pole for his first race, I was told, you know what? There are deals that can be done. You're taking a chance by waiting later in the year that you can get some discounts as teams want to fill seats. And if you show well in testing, you may not have to pay that full $400,000 price, and you get some things done there. And then another person was Brian Herta. Brian said, I know it doesn't seem possible, but, and this was after Jackson won Team USA, he said, you'll be surprised of the people that will jump on board, seeing the talent, seeing the potential. And he was right. Doug Mockett gets involved with certain Team USA drivers that he believes have some potential. And that was huge. And the others have been people that I've met by chance and have become good friends, and they're excited about the opportunity to come to races. But, you know, there's still a little bit of the aspect of, I just want to help this kid try to realize his dreams as well. So we just kept piecing things together, and we've got a lot of stickers on the car, and it's worked out, and I would have never believed it, but here we are, and he gets to go racing, and we'll see where it goes. And it's one step at a time.
Yeah, it really is one step at a time, and it's admirable that you and your wife have taken a leap of faith. We've done similar things with our children, and for example, our son's now in L.A. working on a film career. So
New York things, and L.A. is kind of going out on a ledge too. Yeah,
yeah, we're going out on a ledge and giving them the space to try to make it happen. You know, my goal in life as a kid and in high school and college was to work at the Indianapolis Star. I thought that was an insurmountable dream, but look what happened. 30 years of experience at that newspaper and covering the Indianapolis 500, which one of the iconic events of sport. And so it can happen, but let them dream big. And we don't know how far Jackson will go, but it's been fun to be along for the ride. And I'm proud to say he's our driver for this radio show as well.
You know, and part of my quote pessimism also was trying to be realistic and not being the dad that thought their kid was the greatest thing ever. And in all honesty, you know, in quarter midgets and in go-karts, he didn't win a whole lot. He started to win his last year in quarter midgets. I think I saw on Facebook today, it's Scott Manifold's birthday. So happy birthday, Scott. Scott became our mechanic his last year in quarter midgets, and he came from a go-kart background. He had actually worked for Ed Carpenter Racing for a little while, worked in some formula car events. He knew nothing about quarter midgets, but he basically engineered the car, and for the first time, Jackson really was in good equipment, and he won big his last year and then was just too big, literally, to run in quarter midgets. So that helped make the move to go-karts. And we didn't have a lot of success there because we ran a lot of used tires. We never had a new cart. We did not refresh the engine every other weekend like others did. But Joey Newgarden was a good source of information there. He told me, don't waste your money. A lot of parents are spending $100,000, $150,000 a year going all around the country to win trophies. And it's just about gaining the experience you need, and it's what you do when you get in the race car. And Scott told us this, and I think it was partly, you know, when I would say, yeah, we can't afford to get a new engine or a new cart, he would say, well, actually, it's going to make him better as he gets older, running on bad equipment and bad tires. And Scott was right, because when he showed up in equally prepared race cars against these go-kart champions in equipment, he was faster than them. So it turns out me being cheap did work out in the long run. It helped him when he got into car racing. And we found out that, oh, yeah, I guess if we would have given him a go-kart, he probably would have won a lot more in go-karts. But we saved that money and got enough done in junior formula cars to the point where other people are picking on board and helping. So cool stuff. We'll be at Barber this weekend for the official testing. It is a deep field. I think there are like 25 cars with quite a few returning drivers. So we'll start to see where things stand out this weekend. And a bonus test day tomorrow at Putnam Park, where I think it's going to be like 41 degrees. So that'll be fun. So we're going to shake down the car tomorrow. Yeah, so looking forward to that as well. All right, coming up, I'll see what we missed on the other side. Oh, you know, I want to touch on real quick, and Bob Pockris is coming up, and you're going to chat with Bob. Just some general thoughts on the dirt race. My first was, I was surprised they immediately announced it's coming back next year to Bristol, not because it was bad. I found it entertaining and engaging, but it seemed like a huge hassle and a major expense to make all this happen.
Yeah, I think so. I'm surprised as well. I would have taken a deep dive into the finances, you know, talk to the drivers, et cetera. I thought it was a good event. I think it can be a great event, and I think they'll learn some things. I think they'll run it at night next year to help the visibility for the drivers. The dust was a problem.
Okay.
But all things considered, and when I say that, given the amount of water that was standing around the racetrack from all the rain, they were flooding in parking lots, in near TV compounds, and in midway areas. It's remarkable that race was even held, dirt or pavement. And so good for them. I think they'll clean it up, so to speak. And I think it'll be a better show next year. But I don't know that I'd want to do it every week.
No, definitely not every week. You know, and it was one of the races that I already found kind of interesting. Either of the Bristol races are good. I might have chosen some other events, you know, just run it at Eldora and keep the two Bristol races. But, you know, differing opinions on whether there was some upset feelings over the new Tony Stewart racing series that's going to be on CBS. Who knows? Different things have been said on that front, but for one reason or another, it's not at Eldora and it's at Bristol. It was good, and it was just something to just kind of shake things up, because they do start to run together just a little bit from that aspect. So I enjoyed that, and I look forward to when they do something unique in the future. And there's more uniqueness with seven road course races. And they're talking, you know, I joked about Chicagoland. I do think we will see NASCAR in a street race very soon. Maybe it's in combination with IndyCar in Nashville somewhere in the near future. I'd like IndyCar to keep that to themselves and it'd be somewhere else, but it could work. It would draw even more eyeballs to that event. Okay, Bob is up next with Kurt, and then we'll see what we missed and more all coming up on Trackside.
This is Eric Castroneves. You are listening to Trackside with Kurt Kevin and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Welcome back to Trackside. We're going to talk a little NASCAR in this segment with our longtime friend Bob Pockris, who, of course, is an Indiana University graduate, a little bit younger than I, but we've our careers have pretty well crossed most of our lives. But anyway, NASCAR reporter for Fox Sports these days. Bob, how you doing?
Doing great, Kurt. How are you?
All's well, and I think we're going to talk a little dirt race. I know people have been to dirt races over the years, but I'm surprised the crews aren't still cleaning out the grills and all the various places where dirt can get. What did you make of the weekend activities? I guess actually Monday activity.
I I take that, you know, NASCAR's willing to try things, and they tried this dirt race and they're going to try it again next year. And they had a problem with the dust, which isn't a unique problem for a dirt track, especially it should have been expected considering that this is the first time they use this track of trying to pile dirt up on top of Bristol. So, you know, was it the most incredible race ever? No, but it was intriguing. It was very unpredictable. And I think that's what can make for an exciting race. And then you got two guys who you're used to seeing battle it at the end of the races when they're on asphalt, Joey Logano and Denny Hamlin, go at it over the final 10, 15, 20 laps.
Yeah, I thought, first of all, I thought Kelly Crandall on racer.com put it pretty well. She said this wasn't perfect, but it wasn't a disaster either. So it was probably something in between. There's 100 different things I'd kind of like to get to, but let's first talk about the dirt itself. First of all, I guess it, like you said, it was to be expected. And if you've ever been to a dirt race, Eldora or the Chili Bowl, you know that that's going to be an issue. Is there, do you think it was a problem? I mean, the drivers talked about lack of visibility. I guess that was the main issue. Do you think there's an alternative down the road? Is there a different kind of dirt that maybe doesn't produce enough as much dust, or would running at night help?
I think you hit it there at the end. I think running at night would definitely help. You know, that's virtually what everybody said after the race. And, you know, look, they tried to run 400 laps on Monday with the truck race and then the cup race. And I think there are a lot of people who think, you know, that's just way too many laps for 3,400 pound cars and vehicles to be racing on for that long. So I think, I think some people say, hey, bring in some dirt late models or some dirt modifieds and have that be part of the show to maybe help get the track kind of prepped and also, you know, potentially help, you know, kind of with the show and with the dust and everything. That's what they used to do at Eldora for the trucks and all. So, you know, could they look at some different dirt? I think so, but I'm not totally convinced that it was a dirt issue as much as it was time of day issue. And also the fact that they got a ton of rain over 2 days. And so, you know, who knows what happens if you don't have all that.
Were you surprised that Martin Truex won the truck race and Joey Logano won the cup race, given that there were so many dirt track ringers in the race?
I was surprised. And I think this kind of leads back to the difficulty of visibility, the difficulty. I think what really surprised the dirt guys is that they tried to go where the moisture was, especially when NASCAR was putting moisture in the upper groove, and that never came in. That didn't create grip as they're used to seeing. So I think that was kind of a big issue. You know, Christopher Bell tried that in the cup race and Rex and is done for the day. So I think I was surprised that Truex and Logano won. I was also surprised that, you know, that a lot of the dirt kind of aces got caught up in things, you know, some of their own doing, some not of their own doing. And I think that certainly impacted the potential of, you know, who was out front there at the end.
So they're going to do this again in 2022. Bob Pockrish joins us, Fox Sports NASCAR reporter. I guess more of a timelier question. What attendance figures did you see?
I think, you know, we were hearing somewhere between 30 and 40,000 is what they were expecting on Sunday. I think that's probably close to what they had on Monday when you consider that they allowed anybody with a Saturday ticket for trucks to stay for the cup race. You know, and certainly I think that's one of the incentives to have it next year, thinking, okay, can we put 130, 140,000? Would there be that many people who would want to come to see a dirt race at Bristol and are still intrigued by it in for a second year? So I think that's part of the incentive to say, hey, let's try this again and just let's see how many people want to come and what type of atmosphere you can have in what's hopefully a kind of a post-pandemic society.
So do you think the 30, 40,000, and by the way, there's a method to this question from my standpoint, working at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, do you think the 30 to 40,000 was a function of just how many people wanted to see a dirt race, or was the ticket number of tickets capped given pandemic issues? what do you make of the figure one way or the other?
Yeah, they, I mean, they sold out all the tickets that they could for both Saturday and Sunday with the social distancing that they wanted to have at the facility. I think there were some that were, you know, definitely like, hey, we want to go see a dirt race. This is cool. And then there were some who were like, man, we haven't gone to a NASCAR race in a year or two and we want to go. So I think it was a mix. You know, if you looked at the t-shirts in the crowd, it was a mix. You know, you saw some dirt t-shirts, but you saw a lot of NASCAR t-shirts too.
So coming up in a few weeks, we've got an Indianapolis 500. And even before that, we've got the opening of the NTT IndyCar Series, April 18th at Barber Motorsports Park. And car number 48 is going to be pretty interesting to watch. Barber Motorsports is a difficult track as it is for an IndyCar driver. And it's going to be even more so for Jimmy Johnson, who comes into this pretty green, even though he's had a lot of testing there and in various different kinds of cars. How much interest is there, I guess, on your behalf and NASCAR as a whole, or has NASCAR's fan base sort of moved on from wondering what Jimmy Johnson is going to be doing next?
I think maybe the NASCAR fan base might have moved on, but the Jimmy Johnson fan base certainly is going to stick with him and watch him in IndyCar. There's a lot of interest. And there's probably, you know, a lot of his fan base is from the West Coast, you know, him being a California guy. So I think there's probably already, there was already an interest in IndyCar, but I do think his fans are going to take another look. And I think there will be some NASCAR fans who will take a look and see how he does. I think they want to see if he can master it. You know, those who are paying attention know that he hasn't, it's not like he's topping the charts, the speed charts in the tests, right? You know, he's got a learning curve ahead of him. So I think everybody wants to see, you know, how he does initially, but then I think there'll be just as many who want to see, you know, where he's at the end of the year and how he's improved.
How do you think he handles, you know, Jimmy pretty well, how do you think he handles if this is a real struggle, certainly in the first half of the season?
It's going to totally eat him up inside and totally fuel a desire to get better. I mean, I think like it's going to bother him when he's not good, but it's also going to create this fire in him to get better. Jimmy is a guy who needs challenges. He's a guy who, you know, when he went and trained for the Boston Marathon, he set a time for himself that's like, man, that's nuts. Why are you trying to hit that time? And he'd be like, well, that's the only way I can get up at 5 a.m. in the morning to train, because I've got to have that incentive. So I think that him struggling it's going to frustrate him to no end as a competitor, but it's also going to create this desire and this effort of, man, what do I need to do to get better? And, you know, who knows if he'll ever, you know, how good he will get, but I think he's not going to leave anything on the table. That's for sure.
Bob Pockrish joins us, Fox Sports NASCAR reporter. So what do you think at if we're talking at the end of September following the IndyCar Series season, what do you think success looks like for Jimmy? Because, you know, I've been around this a long time. You've certainly, you're raised in Indianapolis. So you know what the competition is like in IndyCar. What's success look like for Jimmy from your side?
I would say a top 10 in a race. You know, I think to me that's success. And I think, you know, when you see where he starts, then, you know, take whatever his finish is in his first race and maybe go up five positions and say, okay, if he hits that mark consistently near the end, then that's success.
Yeah, it's going to be a challenge. The other thing that'll be new this year is NASCAR and the Cup Series racing on the road course in Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I think it's going to be a terrific weekend. I think the weekend that we had in 2020, while stunted and without fans, had the opportunity to be a really good TV show for what it was. What do you think the reaction will be from the sport, from stock car racing to racing on the road course in the Cup cars, as opposed to being on the oval?
I think it's mixed. I mean, I think you heard the Cup drivers say last year there were some who wanted to do the road course, and then there were others who said, you know, for prestige purposes, they wanted to be on the oval. I think there'll be I mean, granted, I'm a little bit biased because, as you say, I'm from Indianapolis. My heart says I want to see them on the oval, but my brain can't give me a good reason why. Right? Like my brain says, well, it's going to be a good race on the road course. And it should be an exciting race on the road course. So what does it matter? But when you were somebody who ran the mini marathon and you ran around the oval, there's just something about about the oval. So I'm mixed. I think there are going to be a lot of people who are mixed, and I think all those thoughts will probably go away about midway through the road course event when they're coming to the finish of stage two and they're door to door and can't figure out who's going to win until the last turn.
How is it received that IndyCar will be racing alongside the Cup cars in that weekend? I guess it happened on the Xfinity side in July. How do you think that's received, just the camaraderie and being around everybody and seeing a different product on television? Do you think that is interesting or impactful in any way?
I think it's great. I think, race fans, anything to encourage race fans to maybe watch a different type of racing is a good thing. I think for the industries, it's great to have that intermingling. It's great to have, if you're around each other, you bounce ideas off each other, you see what other people do, and it can give you ideas of how you can make your sport better. So I think that I don't think there's any reason not to do it. And I kind of hope that it occurs in a couple more places in the future down the road.
I guess last thing, I hadn't really thought about this, but I'll ask you from a logistical standpoint. We've seen a lot of creativity in coming up with race weekends at different places. Nashville, for example, both on the IndyCar and NASCAR sides, the dirt race we've talked about. Do you think, and is it possible for a Cup weekend at Indianapolis to be a road course and an oval weekend? Is it possible or logistically interesting, feasible, pick your word, that you could do both someday on both types of tracks?
Do you want to throw the dirt track in turn three in there too? And then we could have a triple header.
We could do that.
All right. I'm game for that. Look, I mean, I think anything is possible. I think, obviously that probably come down to finances and how much TV money does is used it for that weekend. But, sure, why not? I mean, the thing is that NASCAR now is used to running races without practice. So, so could you do one event where you do have practice and one that you don't to kind of shorten the weekend or have something where it's a very short practice? And I think NASCAR would be open to it. As far as the teams go, as far as NASCAR as a sanctioning body, and can it be worked out with TV partners, and would you have to take a race away from somewhere else? I think those would be the bigger issues rather than like the logistics issue of, oh gosh, can we get a road course car and a oval car ready for one weekend?
I guess I'll ask you one more question because it occurs to me. You've been a media guy your whole life, your whole career. Do you expect long-term issues if racing, and in particular this we'll talk about NASCAR, doesn't have these practices to fill TV time on say Fridays or Saturdays? If the condensed schedule continues in the future, is that impactful because you don't have a storyline on Friday, for example? You might be running trucks and Xfinity, etc., but you're not having the Cup cars as much on the racetrack and as many days to talk about. Is that a problem long term?
Kurt, you're talking to a biased guy. You're talking to a guy in the media who relies on content and engaging people and knowing that when there's on-track activity that tends to lend itself to those things. So, there's certainly a concern. I think there's a bigger concern from the tracks that have built these interactive garage areas where fans can walk and watch the teams work in the garage. You can't have those and then not have the teams working in the garage. they've built these incredible, fan walks and things. So I think, to me, that's the bigger issue. of the interaction with fans, engaging with fans? What type of activities do you have? You know, if you don't, if you decide to have one day shows, and now NASCAR pretty much with their new car next year has said they're going to have pretty much practice and qualifying, but you know, in the years to come, if you decide, okay, we're going to have a certain number of races without practice and qualifying, what are you doing in those markets to interact with fans? Because I think that's been lost, and the teams know that, and the sponsors know that, and they're certainly concerned about that.
Good stuff. I agree with you. We haven't really delved too much into that because we've been in a pandemic, but I think that's something to keep an eye on. Bob, good travels. I guess you got a weekend off being Easter. Maybe you don't ever take weekends off because you're a workaholic, but good stuff. You can read Bob's work on Fox Sports' website. And Bob, we'll see you soon. If not the Indy 500, maybe we'll see you on the Brickyard weekend on the road course.
All right. Looking forward to it, Kurt.
Thanks. We'll be back in just a minute here for Trackside at 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Final segment of the program. Good to hear from Bob Pockrass, one of my favorite people and one of the hardest working guys in our industry. Also, thanks to all of you for the kind comments about Jackson's announcement with J. Howard Driver Development for this year's USF 2000 program. So we'll continue to send out some social media stuff from him on the track tomorrow at Putnam Park and this weekend, Sunday and Monday, at Barber Motorsports Park for the official Road to Indy spring training. And that's where we'll do the show next week. We'll start talking more about what's happening in IndyCar. Hey, big test tomorrow at Texas. We'll find out what we're learning about, and we'll be able to preview what's happening at IMS at the end of the next week, next week. Does that make sense? Next week? Next week? Yes. Thanks to Brad Huber back in the studio. For Kurt, I'm Kevin. This is 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.